Welcome to Let's Talk, brought to you live by the National Indigenous Radio Service, the only opportunity offered to the broader community to be informed on the issues and current affairs from a First Nations perspective. This is Amy McGuire with Let's Talk.
Good morning and welcome to Let's Talk. First of all, I'd like to acknowledge the continuing sovereignty of all First Nations people all across the country. I'd like to acknowledge my elders past and present and the elders of more recent arrivals. Welcome to our listeners if you tuned in across the nation via the National Indigenous Radio Service. And if you're listening on the web, 989fm.com.au, or on the podcast a little bit later, welcome to you as well. It's great to have your company. And today I have two very special guests in the studio. I have Glenys Briggs and Carol McGregor in the studio today. Welcome to the show.
Thank you very much. I too would like to acknowledge the traditional owners of this land we stand today and pay my respects to the elders past and present and the ones listening now.
That's a beautiful welcome. Thank you so much. Can I ask you, Glenys, your mob and your country?
I'm from Victoria and my mob is Yorta Yorta and Tangarang, and my great-grandmother was Wiradjuri, so... Yeah, I've got quite a few connections around New South Wales and Victoria.
A lot of family down there, yes. Obviously. Yeah. And how did you end up in Brisbane?
A life change. I came up to stay with a cousin up here from Victoria. And I stayed and I'm still here. And that was, you know, about 14 years ago.
We won you over. And Carol, can I ask you, your mob in your country?
First of all, I'd like to acknowledge the country that we're on at the moment and pay my respects to the elders past and present. My family is from Geelong and Wathaurong mob, but I was born in New Zealand because my grandfather's family was taken to New Zealand. But I've lived in Tasmania, and also I've been in Brisbane for about 35 years now.
Yeah. So in New Zealand, did you know a lot about your Koori connections?
Only through my family. And unfortunately, when I was growing up, we weren't allowed to talk very much about it. So it was we talked about it within family, but outside of family, we were almost silent. Yeah,
it must have been amazing because New Zealand has such a strong Maori culture and presence for you to grow up like that, so disconnected from that Indigenous heritage.
Yes, yeah, because some of our family looked like Maori, but we weren't because we didn't have those connections. So that sense of belonging was quite adrift for our family.
Yeah, it's very interesting. I was just talking to Carol before about just it seems to be a lot of mob ended up in New Zealand, and I just wonder if there's, you know, some research into it. But we're here today because you've got a really amazing gallery exhibition over at the State Library of Queensland, and it revolves around possum skin cloaks. Glenys, can you tell me a little bit about how you got involved in sort of this really ancient cultural connection that we have to these possum skin cloaks?
Well, I'd always vaguely known about possum skin cloaks, but I was doing a Bachelor of Arts degree with Griffith at South Bank with Bovakai, the Indigenous unit there, and Carol was also doing her degree there as well. And so I was researching my family background as well as the histories. And I came across an article with a sketch, and the article was from an exhibition by Benella Art Gallery, and this sketch was done by a settler, and it was of my great grandfather in a possum skin cloak.
Wow!
And immediately there was this, you know, strong connection. I had this connection information that I'd never known about my great-grandfather because there was a write-up about him as well, and this possum skin cloak, it's just so iconic.
Yeah, right.
And so I kept on researching more into the possum skin cloak, and I had decided that I would present the possum skin cloak as a final piece for my graduation. And going through this, I also found out that Carol was also doing the research on the possum skin cloak.
And you're both
as well.
In the same area.
Yes.
Yeah,
and
both Corey's,
it was amazing. And so we had that connection to each other as well. And so we shared a lot of the information. And I'd finished my graduation with my family cloak. And I'd taken pieces down to my family so they could be involved in it, you know, the making of it as well. And Carol was also producing her family cloak as well. It was amazing.
Did you want to talk about that, Carol? Because you grew up with this disconnection, I guess, over in New Zealand. Was that a part of you connecting to your culture?
As I said, that sense of belonging was lost and fractured. And making these cloaks, and you have connection to your ancestors, especially when you know the significance of the cloaks for everyone's personal identity and also the mob's identity. So I think that, like Glenys, the cloaks are very iconic. They're very special pieces. They're not just an item of clothing. They're not just a rug or a cloak. They're something that's very unique to each individual and also to our culture.
And did you find a lot of evidence of how to make those cloaks? I know a lot of people go back into the colonial records. Was there a lot of evidence about the significance of those cloaks in those records?
Well, we had a great start because there were four amazing women in Victoria who actually revisited this cultural practice and looked into the making of the cloak. After they had found these old cloaks in the... Was it the museum, Carol?
Yeah, that was Museum Victoria. I think it was about 1995. They were actually doing a... there was a new act, a parliamentary act, that the museums were allowed to... had to open up their collections for Indigenous people so that they could look at their work of their ancestors. And I think it was Trina Hamm, Vicky Cousins, Lee Darrick... And I don't think Marie Clark was there, but Lee Derrick and also Vicky's sister, Deborah Cousins, they were there doing a printmaking workshop. And as I understand, one of the museum attendants said, "Oh, you might be interested in this."
So it was just like an offhanded comment. Yes. You might be interested in this piece of fabric. I guess they would have thought that.
Yeah, and inside the box... was one of the original possum skin cloaks, one of the only two in Australia.
Wow. So it must have been amazing to be there at that moment when that cloak was pulled out.
Yeah, right.
It just gives me shivers thinking about it.
Well, Vicky Cousins said they just all stood there and the cloak was on the table with no glass or anything and they could feel their ancestors in the room immediately. And I think the presence of their ancestors in the room, they looked at this artefact that had been locked away in a box and not really... cared for, and they saw that they needed to do something and that they needed to actually, first of all, it was falling to pieces.
Yeah, right.
That they needed to save this piece of their heritage for their children and that they'd replicate the cloak. And there's two cloaks, so they replicated both these old cloaks and they devised contemporary methods that they could make these cloaks. So they replicated these cloaks exactly and both of them are in the National Australian Museum.
It really makes you realise thinking that that cloak was just stuffed away somewhere in a museum.
Yes.
No care provided for it at all. You really see the different ways black and white see these cloaks, don't you?
And it's still happening with other, you know, artefacts that nobody's seen the light of day, just shoved in a dark, dusty corner somewhere.
Or a shed.
Yeah,
like
or
the British
a shed.
Museum. They have sheds of our artefacts.
It's terrible.
And they won't give them back.
Yes.
They don't need them. Why have they got them shoved in the corner?
Exactly.
And I think now that because everyone, the significance of the movement of the contemporary cloaks and the attachment that they know that we have to our cloaks and our ancestors through the cloaks, that this artefact, these two cloaks are one of the most significant pieces of their collection now.
Because they sort of understand. Can I ask you about how did our mob use cloaks?
There was quite a number of uses that we researched. The cloaks were actually started when the babies were quite small, and there might have been like, you know, two pieces or two or three pieces of possum skins that were stitched together for that baby. And then as that baby grew, the possum skins were added. So and so they were added all through that, through the adult life as well. And they were used to sleep on, to be wrapped in, to carry things in, for ceremonial use. So it was all part of the daily life.
And the art on the skin, on the inside of the skins is really important because that was added too.
Yeah, right.
And there were stories of your life and maybe your initiations of your mob, your totem, the maps of your area, and so your life was on that cloak.
So you know how they often say we were an oral storyteller culture? Yeah. Could it be that we actually told our stories and wore them and grew with our stories on our skins?
That's what they were. They were stories. Yes. Yeah.
But they were completely lost.
Held close to your body. And then, so the cloaks were, the skins were incised with mussel shells or sharp rocks. And then those incisions were rubbed with ochres and fat. So the cloaks became very waterproof. Not only were they warm and beautiful, thick fur, but they were waterproof. And so that you could wear them, you know, as a raincoat. But also you can turn around the skin so your patterning was on the inside. On the outside, I should say, and in ceremonies, everybody could see who you were and what mob you were from.
Wow.
Because they were so, your identity was on show. And I think that image we were looking at before of William Barak in a ceremony, all their cloaks were, all their patterning was on the outside.
Yes.
Yeah.
It's really amazing. It just makes me wonder, they were so significant. Why are there only so few in existence? Why, I think you were telling me before, Carol, that there was only five in the world, only two in Australia still existing, you know, from the old times, I guess. Why weren't they sort of protected before?
I think that when settlement had arrived in each area, blankets were handed around.
The blanketless, the government blanketless.
So, and so the possum skin cloaks weren't made as they used to be. And in a lot of the areas too, when settlement had happened, it was harder to catch the possums because they were shifted out of the area. People were shifted out of their own local areas as well. There's a lot of factors in there why there's not a significant amount now.
Fenced off from your land.
Yes.
So they had no access to the resources.
Yeah, right.
And then a lot of people were buried in their cloaks too because they belonged to you and they were your identity. You were buried in your cloaks.
Yeah, right.
And I think there is records of cloaks being collected, but they weren't looked after.
No.
And so they had insect attacked or they were destroyed. So we're very lucky.
It makes me wonder, how did they collect those cloaks? If they were so important to a person's culture and being, they told their stories. Why did they take the cloaks away? I just think those cloaks, they could tell a very sad story as well, the fact that they've survived as well.
Yes. But there were also cloaks made that were sold.
Oh, right.
For food, you know.
Exchange.
Exchange for food. Mm. So there were... there was the ceremonial cloaks and the personal cloaks, but there were also cloaks made for exchange for barter.
Yeah, in Geelong there is a painting called The Barter, and it's a man bartering with a cloak that he's made.
Right.
And I think in a lot of the colonial records, especially in southeast Queensland, they talk about how beautifully the cloaks were made and how fine the stitching was, and that they're a really good item to exchange because they're so warm in winter here.
I guess the colonialists would have seen it as a piece of clothing, wouldn't they have? That's what they would have seen it
rug,
as, and they
a
would
rug
have
to go on yeah. the bed. Or rug just,
because that's where Western people see clothing, I guess.
Yes.
I guess fashion is supposed to be that identity, but not in the same way, is it? It's a very different way of seeing it.
It's interesting in the research and the references. There's very few references that actually talk about the art on the inside of the skins, and if they do, it's very briefly.
Right.
So there's only a few, and it's done by Aboriginal people. The references talk about the art on the skins in the way that they, in the context that they were, and with all the identity and how important the art was. But in the references from the historical colonial references, it just talks about either one of them says crude markings.
Yes. Doesn't
that
say it all?
The original cloaks in Victoria, how beautifully they were stitched and beautiful the markings are.
Yeah,
and
right.
How very fine the work was.
And they didn't realise just how important those markings were to the person who held that cloak.
Yeah, right. Yeah. How much of it, you're talking about historical records, how much of that ancient art making was actually handed down, even though we had so much dispossession, obviously, down south? Did a lot of it survive? Were you able to get a lot of that back when you were doing your research?
With the cloak?
Yeah.
No, it was... There wasn't a lot of information in regards to the traditional making and that of the cloak. There were, you know, bits and pieces here and there, but the girls who had originally saw their original cloaks had seen that how that the cloaks were stitched together with kangaroo sinew from the front, yeah. And how those skins were sort of treated and that. There's a lot more information around Victoria than there is like New South Wales or Queensland.
Is there a reason for that? Is that just because it's sort of a lot of the ladies down in Victoria found out about it first, or is that the main reason that there's so much information, more information in Victoria?
I don't know. I think that there was at the time there was a lot more information gathered through colonial research than there has been up this way.
Well, I think we're at the start here. Yes. We've just started this revival here because it's right. Really everyone has been saying no, there were no cloaks here. So we're at the start of people finding references, and I think more and more are going to be found, because even since we opened The Art of the Skins, there's been references coming in. Oh, look at this, look at this. And actually someone emailed me a reference the other day, and it is, the headline is Possum Skin Cloak Used as a Kitchen Bench in Brisbane.
Oh, really?
And how they talked about how they were making their damper on the corner of one of their cloaks.
Oh, really?
Wow.
And so they used the cloak as the skin as making their food on that. So because they carried their cloaks everywhere, they were really precious, and they obviously that was one of the things that were on the ground, and that's what they made their food on.
So can you tell me a little bit about the timeline? When did you start to sort of think we're going to research into southeast Queensland? Because there was that perception that we didn't have possum skin cloaks up here.
Well, I had finished my Bachelor of Arts degree, but Carol continued her studies, and she's doing her doctorate. So I'm very proud of her, and she has managed to research it deeper than what I have, and she sort of kept me up to date with what was going on with the research, and it's been fantastic how there are just snippets here and there to start with, that the possum skin cloak just travelled from Victoria right up to Maryborough in Queensland, you know.
Well, so it was traded up.
No,
upwards.
Actually.
It just travelled.
Yeah. Well, there are very cold places here in Queensland, like the Bunya Mountains, because they used to hold the festivals and that, and I'd imagine that they would have worn possum skin cloaks up in the mountains at Bunya Mountains.
There's a very good reference about the possum skin cloaks and how they were made by an Indigenous person, I think, Garibal, and he talks about how the cloaks were made with the sinews and actually the scraping of the mussel shells and the rocks into the skins, and how that the women carried the cloaks from place to place and how they were important. So that's a really great reference for southeast Queensland.
So they were made up here too.
Well, I was thinking, like, today is incredibly cold here in Brisbane. I mean, it would just seem logical that 70,000 years... Of course mob would have developed these sort of technologies,
right.
Wouldn't
there
they?
There was trading between skins of inland and where the skins were thicker and in winter they were just more luxurious with
right.
the mobs on the coast.
So you could tell where different skins come from.
Yes, that's right. Like a black, pure black possum skin was a lot more valuable in the cloak and the rugs than a pale grey skin that was more, I think it's more common here, the pale grey skins
right.
in the warmer climates.
And I don't think that the fur is quite as thick as like in down Victoria you had the grey and the brown, and I don't think the fur is as thick.
No, that's right. But interestingly, we get our possum skins now ethically sourced from New Zealand where they have a culling program. And a lot of them are the
There's
thick brown
ones. There's heaps of possums growing up in my roof in Rockhampton.
No, we don't want it.
No, we don't. But because they were that come from New Zealand, the brown and black possum fur over there is a lot more common. And for us, we wanted to use some grey in the Art of the Skins, make our local cloaks out of some grey skins, which were harder to get in New Zealand.
Oh, really?
Even though they were more common here at the time. Mm.
So this might be a stupid question, but why the possum skin rather than other furs, I guess?
Well, kangaroo skin was also used to make cloaks. And they're a lighter material. They're not as warm. But again, they were used in similar ways to the possum skins.
But the possum skin was more highly, and there is references in Southeast Queensland that they were more highly valued because the fur was a lot thicker. And also a lot. I don't know. It wasn't as, what do they call it? Not harsh, or it wasn't
as coarse. It was quite soft.
Yeah, wasn't as. It's a lot softer, so it's more. It's nicer to wear.
It really doesn't gel with the image that a lot of white people want to believe of Aboriginal people, that before Europeans came, we were just naked, you know? It doesn't gel with that image, I guess, which is why white people don't want to talk about it.
And actually, in Victoria, there's a fantastic reference of people walking around in their cloak, possum skin cloaks, and the colonial person says, oh, they almost look regal. That's probably why they wanted to whip the cloaks away.
They look too regal. Take that cloak off.
It's really amazing ration. Because we're sort of starting to redo our history. As more sort of blackfellas go into the archive, we're starting to see just how sophisticated and how intelligent our people were. And it's been hidden even in land management. Like I think of Bill Gamage's book, they don't want to talk about how we managed the land. They don't want to talk about how we used Aboriginal agriculture in Bruce Pascoe. And they don't want to talk about possum skin cloaks, do they? And being able to bring them together and just how important they were.
Yeah. Totally different picture, isn't it?
No, it totally is. And I guess that's why it's so important for you to go back and start retracing that history, is it?
And it's been a wonderful journey for us.
Yes, it has. And as artists too, that knowing that we can go back in the archives and bring back this truth, things that have been silenced and also shamed. That's the other important point. So we can stand up proud and say this is, you know, this is our culture.
And I think it's great having two strong women doing the research, and it seems to be women leading in Victoria as well, because I was reading that it was mostly women who made these possum skins cloak. Is that true, that it was more of a woman's thing that they made these?
Yes, and it was done it wasn't just done by themselves. It was like a community affair then, you know. The women would sit around stitching these cloaks.
Yeah, right.
There is references of men stitching as well too. And I know the Victorian senior cloak makers, that's why we've made our workshops open to all community.
Yeah.
And actually it's been great seeing men, women and children and grandchildren at our workshop, possum skin cloak workshops.
You can see their pride growing, you know, as they were stitching and painting these skins. It was great to be
and
there.
Working with the medium. A lot of people hadn't worked with the medium, you know, possum skins before.
So they're very excited.
A lot of people hadn't worked with ochres.
Yeah, right.
So we had artists. We had a lot of people who were artists and a lot of people who weren't artists.
Yeah, right.
So it was wonderful to introduce them into ochres and talk about the history of the cloaks too in their areas.
Can you tell me a little bit about the process towards making a possum skin cloak?
When I first saw it and read about it, I thought, this is going to be a mammoth job, you know. And I didn't know where to start. And so I contacted one of the original girls who'd started the revisiting this practice in Victoria, Lee Darrick. And I went down to Victoria and stayed for a few days with Lee, learning the practice of how to make these cloaks. And first of all, the skins were cut to fit, and then they were stitched together with a more contemporary piece. Now we don't use kangaroo sinews; we use a wax thread, and it's very similar in looking like it.
And strength.
And it's very strong. So we used wax thread to stitch the pieces together. And I learned how to mix the ochres, gathering the black wattle resin to mix with the ochres, to bind the ochres, to put onto the skins. And so after learning that, I brought that back and was able to tell Carol, you know, so together we sort of worked out on our own how to put our cloaks together.
And I'd been making cloaks a lot of cloaks, but not with possum skins. Because
right.
I think when, like Glenda said, you don't know how to go about it, but also you want, there's a hesitation because you know the protocols around the cloaks.
Yes,
it's not as if
too.
You just make
Absolutely.
A cloak.
No, no, there must be a very strong...
And I contacted Lee Darrick as well just and talked to her about holding the workshops here, but went down and saw Marie Clark about holding workshops and how going about making a community cloak.
Yeah, right.
Because making our family cloaks is different than making a community cloak with a lot of people and getting each person to do or family to do a skin and then bringing that all together. It's a bigger process. And so we had information from the senior cloak Victorian senior cloak makers, and we've adapted that information for our Southeast Queensland cloaks.
Yeah, right. So there was different ways of obviously making cloaks depending on which mob or nation you were from, it seems to be.
Well, different ways of maybe cutting the skins and yes. putting it together. Different ways, and there are different ways of stitching as well.
Because some of the original stitching is different than the stitch yes. that we use now, but we use the flatter stitch that Lee Darrick used because it's better for the artwork to actually have that flatter stitch, whereas it was more of blanket stitch in the original cloaks.
Yes.
And when you started to do these workshops in Queensland, I mean, how did you start that? How did you begin to consult with community?
I started doing possum skin armbands with the state library, just doing little workshops. And from that, Carol and I were able to approach the Brisbane State Library with this idea of making a community cloak. Carol had so much information that she'd already gathered, mm-hmm. and she's in the process of doing her doctorate, and doing her thesis.
Yeah, I think I'll be.
So you can tell her.
Well, I'd had this idea about doing workshops and approach, and Glenys and I'd sat down, and Glenys wanted to do workshops too, but with all the research I'd been gathering. I remember the day that I bought you a book and said, this is it, we've got so many research. And we decided we'd approach, I'd seen Carol Dargan had a little community exhibition that you could apply for.
Yeah, right.
So I wrote a proposal on behalf of Glenys and myself to actually be part of this community exhibition and put forward some of the references that I had in my research. And they said, this is too important. We need to make this bigger. And even though we were going to do a few workshops, we decided that we'd do something bigger, and I applied for quite a few grants, and we got grants from the Gold Coast City Council, from the Sunshine Coast City Council, from Arts Queensland and Arts Link. And with those grants, we were able to take the workshops to the Sunshine Coast communities, Brisbane communities and the Gold Coast communities.
Yes.
And I think there was around about 120 people that were involved in putting their stories on the cloaks and Art of the Skins. And it just became a lot bigger than what we... Originally, it was just going to be one cloak, then it was going to be three cloaks, and then it turned out to be six magnificent cloaks. And each cloak is quite different too. And I know that both Glenys and I have done the artist camp at the Gold Coast, and from talking to when we moved through community, I know that a couple of years ago I had mentioned to people about the possum skin cloaks that I've been researching in my, because I think I started in about 2014 in my doctorate, and saying that there was cloaks in this area and just asking people about, and particularly elders, about whether they'd heard of possum skin cloaks and that we would like to do workshops. And everyone was very, very enthusiastic. So once, and I talked to the first cloak we made was the Gubby Gubby Carby Carby cloak, and I went and approached Elder Uncle Nerdon Serico and took my family cloak to him and showed them some of the references from his country. And his daughter was there too, Melinda Serico, and I showed her lots of things. She said, I know where there might be some more references. So we jumped in her car and went up to Kenilworth, their traditional winter ground, camping grounds.
Oh, wow.
And we went to the original station there that now is on the camping grounds and spoke to one of the family members who holds a lot of references, a lot of the paperwork. And we spent a couple of days going through this paperwork and and they'd been through this paperwork before but not looking for possum skin cloaks.
Well, that's what I was going to say, because you were saying that sometimes it might just even be a line or it might be just
yep.
they wrapped
yes.
them in a possum skin cloak. So yes. it's very much like almost like searching for needles in haystacks. Is that what it feels like sometimes, I guess?
But for Glenys and I have been researching cloaks for 8 to 10 years now. We immediately hone in on those.
Yeah, you immediately
lines.
See them.
Yeah, we see them. But for someone who hasn't and not aware that the cloak's in the area, you probably just
overlook it.
And that's what's happened. And now I think we'll see a lot more references for southeast Queensland and a lot more people realising that their ancestors made and wore and used possum skin cloaks.
It's really amazing. It reminds me of something that Bruce Pascoe was saying, and it was about white professors didn't believe him when he talked about Aboriginal agriculture and the yams and all the grains they were growing.
Yes.
And so he had to go back into the explorers' journals, and they were there, clear as day, publicly available in like books that you can buy from bookstores. But no one was looking. He found like descriptions of daisy yams and fields of them, but no one was. They would read this passage and they would glaze over it. I guess that's the same of what
they
happened.
They don't want to see it.
They don't want to see it.
It's really exciting now that since those workshops have happened, I've had several people come to me and say, we'd like to make our own family cloak.
Yeah.
And I'd just say, well, when you're ready, you know, we can give you a hand.
Yeah. And it's passing on. I think that was the important thing for Glenys and I. Once we knew that we wanted to do the workshops here, we wanted to pass on the knowledge and skills to people so that they could actually make their family cloaks. Because we've seen what it's done in Victoria and New South Wales and how that sense of identity and belonging among families and among communities has really grown, because they can wear these possum skin cloaks in ceremonies and important events. And just the visual thing for the community is and the understanding of what these cloaks mean is just so special and so important.
It's really important for healing, isn't it? When you consider where Australia wants us to go, being able to come back to our cultural roots that they thought had sort of disappeared. How does that feel for you, I guess?
Well, when you doing this possum skin cloak community project has been fantastic, because you're giving this cultural practice back to the community, back to somebody who didn't even know about it.
Mm.
And they say, you know, this is yours, you own it. You know, and the empowerment they feel about stitching these possum skin cloaks together and being in this community surrounding with everybody doing it, it's just lifted people so much and that they want to keep doing it.
That's right. And Vicky Cousins now runs healing workshops using the possum skin cloaks down in Victoria.
Wow.
So healing is a big part of it, because this practice was rested for 150 years and now we're bringing it back and we're handing it to people, and people are just embracing it, and then as Glenn said, they want to take on their own family cloaks, and they're very excited about doing this and passing it on to their children and the next generations.
I just I was reading an article and I was discussing it with Carol, so I haven't shown it to you yet, Glenys, but are you worried that maybe perhaps because Western society looks at this as solely, I guess, as a design, as clothing, are you ever worried that that sort of knowledge could be commodified and sort of reappropriated by Australia in the way other sort of knowledges happen to be occasionally?
Well, not really. If there's anyone that approaches us to say that they want to take this cultural practice from our workshops into the wider community, we'd like to see it actually kept within the Indigenous community for their own practice. No. We're not saying that we don't want the wider community to know about it. Of course we do. But this belongs to us, and I think so much has been taken from us that we need to just hold on to it.
Would you like to add something to that, Carol? Or?
It's hard to, you know, you showed me the article, it's hard to know what's behind that, because you can't really appropriate and take that cloak's meaning if you're non-Indigenous or if it doesn't mean anything to your family and your mob and your community. So as Glenna said, we share these knowledges and skills, and we acknowledge also the Victorian senior cloak makers when we're doing this, because those protocols are very important when you make a cloak. A cloak is not just a garment, it's not just a piece of clothing. There is a lot of protocols around working with this material and making cloaks.
The reason I sort of raise that is because, you know, those things with the Indian headdresses, and you always see, you know, people in, you know, even just around Australia, you see like kids in headdresses or going to music festivals, and I don't think they realise, I don't think they understand just how important those cultural symbols are to a people who have been completely dispossessed and their land has been stolen and their people massacred. Yes. They don't understand that, and it just makes it makes so much sense to me when you explain the importance of cloaks, just how wrong that is to appropriate other cultures
that's
in that way.
That's why we're standing up and owning it, and we've got to own it really strongly and show that this is ours. It's not yours, and it's not yours to appropriate.
It's quite, I don't think a lot of people would like to hear that, but I think it's really important to make that point. I guess if people want to get involved, any Murrays out there who are listening or people all across the country, how would they start to, and maybe if they're not even in Brisbane, how would they start to start reclaiming this knowledge back or start to learn, maybe if they don't have access to you guys, but hopefully they do, but if they're anywhere in the country, how could they start to sort of start researching into this themselves?
You could start researching your local histories and looking at, you know, what was written by in colonial records, but also talking to elders and what memories they have. Because a lot of people, like in the Gold Coast, Auntie Kathleen Lena, she remembers her grandmother having possum skins curing on her back fence.
Wow.
She says this in a book. So a lot of elders still have memories of possum skins being around or talks of that sort of culture which has been rested, and that's what you need to do. And then, like Glenn said, we're here if someone wants to learn how to do this contemporary method that we have. But because it is a big project, starting a possum skin cloak, it's not easy when you're cutting into your beautiful possum skin and not knowing. So it's a puzzle to put it all together, but also it's there's a lot of protocols around the cloaks, and it's important to share the histories of your mob and what you've found before you make the cloaks.
Can you tell me a little bit about the gallery exhibition, Art of Skins?
It's fantastic.
I'm really looking forward to seeing it.
It's absolutely brilliant.
The Kirral Dargan girls have done an amazing job with the curation, Katina Davidson and Freya Carmichael. And I think when you walk in there, especially if you walk in there and it's quite quiet and you see these beautiful possum skin cloaks, they radiate energy for us, I think. And so many stories are on there. And you can actually go, and there's television screens for each area, Sunshine Coast, Brisbane and Gold Coast, and each of the two possum skin cloaks. And you can actually press on the screen and look at each skin, and it will tell you the story and the artist of each skin. So there's a lot of stories in that room.
So it's very different from where this first started when we were talking about 1995, isn't it, Glenys?
Yes.
That now you've got ownership over this exhibition.
Absolutely. And it feels so good to be able to pass on this knowledge that we've gathered to the community out there, you know, and they can then pass it on to their children and their grandchildren. That really excites me.
It's part of the Murray way, isn't it, that you pass on your knowledge?
Yes,
very true.
And I know the Victorian cloak makers, they say that you have a responsibility to pass on these knowledges.
Oh, very true. And I think that's a beautiful way to end it. But would you like to add anything else that we may have missed about people who want to go to this exhibition and what you hope that they would take away from it? Particularly, not just Murray, we're talking a lot about, you know, reclaiming our own knowledge, but I guess non-Indigenous Australians, what would you like them to see when they go in and see this, these possums and cloaks? They very much have to decolonise their own minds when they look at them, don't they?
I think that people going in to see this, it can be a bit overwhelming. It's such a beautiful sight to see all these cloaks spread around this huge room. And also we have the screens up to tell people about the cloaks and the stories as well. And to actually read about the stories on the cloaks, it helps them, I think, connect with the First Nations community in their area. You know, it's not just a faceless group, because they're reading about their stories and about these people. This was actually done by a person, and this is their story.
And it's representing the communities here and now too.
Yeah, definitely.
And And I know that we both look at traditional and contemporary cloaks and they both radiate the same power. So the communities representing the communities that we're in right now with that same authority for the cloaks.
Yeah, and it shows we're still surviving and that culture hasn't gone away, doesn't it?
Yes. We're not static either. We haven't just remained the same. We're continually growing. Our culture's continually moving and it's quite diverse. So I think that's this exhibition shows, that we are strong.
That's beautiful, especially in the same week that we've elected Pauline Hanson to the Senate. So I think that's a great way to end it.
Yes.
And that could be a whole other hour we could talk. But thank you so much for coming in today. I really appreciate it. And I hope that I'll put our the details on about Art of Skins up on the website, and hopefully we can put in some details as well about how people out there can contact you, Glenys and Carol, if they want to continue, regardless of where they are in Australia. So thank you so much for coming in, and I look forward to seeing your exhibition.
Thanks
for having
us.